This is Central Time. Internal research from the social media giant Facebook shows that the company knows that its Instagram platform is bad for young girls, especially when it comes to things like body image and mental well-being. That info comes from documents revealed in an investigation published last week by the Wall Street Journal. According to the company's own research, 32% of teen girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, the app made them feel worse. The research team also found that many teens blame Instagram for increases in things like anxiety and depression. Our next guest says Instagram is effectively a weight loss app and says for anyone even remotely interested in fitness content, this is a big issue. Casey Johnston spent 5 years writing the column Ask a Swole Woman for publications like Self and Vice. She currently writes a newsletter called She's a Beast, where she writes about fitness and related issues and why working out doesn't have to be complicated. Casey, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, you wrote on that newsletter recently, you were not surprised to hear this information about Instagram. Why was this not a surprise to you?
It was not a surprise because, I mean, I think this has been sort of circulating in the conversation for a while now about social media generally and Instagram specifically. It wasn't Facebook internal research, but just a growing perception that Instagram doesn't make a lot of people feel great about themselves. On the fitness content tip specifically, I've definitely experienced on my own accounts as well as accounts that I've made just for the purpose of experimenting with what Instagram shows you. Not scientific research, but you know, it's my reality that showing any interest in fitness content or suggestions about what to eat inevitably leads to the app showing you more weight loss content through its algorithms.
Right. Can you talk about the sort of things you see either when you're doing your own main Instagram account, which focuses a lot on fitness, or these sort of dummy accounts? What kind of material keeps coming up again and again?
It's a lot of aggressive diet content, recommending really, really meager calorie amounts or really aggressive exercise regimens. Often they're marketed very specifically as not like there's a whole world of the ways we can experience fitness and exercise, especially like strength training is my favorite. There's a number of experiences we could be having, and the algorithm sort of drills down to exercise for the purpose of weight loss specifically.
Talking to Casey Johnston, she writes about fitness. You can find her newsletter. It's called She's a Beast. Talking about Instagram, internal documents from Facebook, company that owns Instagram, shows that researchers there found that Instagram makes people feel worse, especially young girls, body image, mental and emotional well-being, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this yourself or for someone in your family? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You said the A word there, Casey, algorithm. And I think there's sometimes a sense that social media is just this sort of neutral environment. And, well, we stumble across these things that might promote bad self-image. It's up to us to protect ourselves. You see the responsibility lying with a company like Facebook and how it runs Instagram.
Yes, totally. I mean, the way that Instagram shows you content, like you have your feed of people that you follow, which it has, the apps have their own way of figuring out what order they show that content in. There's also a separate part of Instagram called the Explore page, which is completely algorithmically generated, which means Instagram and or Facebook are looking at the things that you're interested in based on what you follow, what hashtags you search, what you interact with or comment on or like, and building a page for you of things that it thinks you'll be interested in. And that, as I was saying, when you're talking about fitness content, mm-hmm. that page, that sort of algorithmically driven page gets overwhelmed by themes of weight loss and aggressive dieting.
And you're worried, and these internal researchers pointed out this is a risk. Seeing these messages seems to have a very real world effect on especially young girls, not just young girls, but especially young girls when it comes to how they see their own bodies. And that might translate into how they feel about themselves in general. their nutrition and exercise behaviors, things like that. How much do you worry about that impact?
I worry a lot. I mean, like, I grew up in a very different era where a lot of this sort of diet culture and diet talk came from magazines and celebrities. Obviously, it was like, you know, very thin bodies portrayed on TV. But now Instagram is a very different and almost feels like more encompassing world where you can get in almost a sort of echo chamber of certain kinds of content and you can almost kind of fall down a rabbit hole. Like we've had a lot of years of conversations at this point about people falling down the rabbit hole of like right-wing content on Facebook or on YouTube through their algorithms. It appears to me there's sort of a similar effect going on with fitness content or health content broadly and weight loss and these sort of images of women that are often manipulated. You don't really even know that they're real. They could be Photoshopped, but they're out there making girls feel worse about themselves. And I think it's like a very big problem.
We're talking to Casey Johnston, a writer focusing on fitness culture and myth busting. She wrote about Instagram and body image in her newsletter called She's a Beast. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you call right now, if you use Instagram, have you had any negative experiences with content? Have you been overwhelmed by weight loss type apps? Have you seen your kid hooked on Instagram, as many people are? Are you worried about the body image messages they get there? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Casey Johnston. She writes about fitness and related issues in a newsletter called She's a Beast. She recently wrote about Instagram and why it can create body image issues for its users. A Wall Street Journal report found a lot of internal research documents from Facebook, which owns Instagram, saying, yeah, it did that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jimmy joins us now in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hello.
Afternoon. Yeah, I guess got a comment and a question. So this stuff is all voluntary. I mean, nobody's forcing anybody to go on any of these sites or click on anything. Not like you're in school having to sit through something. So what is the answer? Is who would moderate what content different age groups or genders, I mean, what they see? I mean, is there going to be a government monitor or, I mean, academics? Are they going to monitor what these folks see? I don't know what the solution is.
Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. If I'm reading your piece right, Casey, you're hoping that it comes from Facebook and Instagram itself, right?
I think that would be ideal if they felt some shame and actually took steps to rectify this issue. I mean, the connection between health and weight loss is increasingly tenuous the more research that we do. And also not great for body perception, but the likelihood that they'll do it is very small. Facebook itself and various corporate figures at Facebook have said, we're begging for the government to regulate us, like go ahead and regulate us. But I don't think they're making it easy. And that's probably going to end up being what the solution is, unfortunately, but I don't have great confidence that it'll be a good solution either.
Under the current status quo, our guest mentioned people do have the option of turning Instagram off. What is your recommendation, especially for younger Instagram users and their parents, about how they deal with what they're seeing there?
It's really hard. I totally take the point that no one has to be, quote unquote, on Instagram, but you do miss out on certain, like there's a lot of things that are happening with like your social groups and so forth that are on these apps that it's understandable that just get off of them is not that workable of an answer for somebody who wants to remain connected to their family or friends or whatever it may be through the app. In order to manage it, it's like one of the things you can do is it's possible to mark on the explore page that you're not interested in certain content. I believe if you hold a long press on it and then select not interested, it should eventually stop showing you these things. I wish that people didn't have to do this, you know, granular management by themselves, but that's one possible solution.
Now, you are someone who promotes fitness and exercise and tries to do it in as healthy a way as possible. Would you like to see something like Instagram have an algorithm that goes to more reliable sources, healthier sources when it's looking for a fitness thing than the, you know, lose 30 pounds in a week site that might pop up?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, this problem does reflect society at large, which is that we largely think of exercise as a vector for weight loss and nothing else, or like a vector for being hotter and nothing else. Whereas there's so much more to it, and it has we have a growing need of it in our lives. We have lots of lifestyle diseases. We have a lot of chronic pain, back pain, neck pain that exercise can really help with. So it's not helpful when people have all of these this broad spectrum of issues that can be helped by exercise if they go to try and find exercise information on the places where they're naturally encountering it, and they're being force-fed weight loss content.
As we wrap up, Casey, I know you've been battling the algorithms on your own Instagram feeds. How have you managed, or have you managed, to cut down on the bad, unhealthy messages showing up in your own feed? Maybe someone else can learn from that.
The best thing that I have found to do is I spend most of my time on a separate account where I only follow various people who are into health and fitness, specifically not for weight loss purposes, not for dieting purposes. Most of them lift weights, they're power lifters, some personal trainers, but like a corner of them who are focused on long-term health, feeling good in your body, as opposed to trying to get abs or lose 10 pounds in a week or all these kinds of things.
Casey, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Casey Johnston spent 5 years writing the column Ask a Swole Woman for publications like Self and Vice. She wrote about Instagram's internal research and body image issues for her newsletter called She's a Beast. New information out from the Wall Street Journal, a big report last week using internal research documents from Facebook, which owns Instagram, shows the company knows that Instagram in many ways affects body image and mental well-being for young girls, and not in a good way. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Over the next decade and a half, automakers around the country and around the world are planning to replace gasoline-powered cars with electric ones. GM, for just one example, says that by 2035, they will eliminate all diesel and gas from their light-duty vehicles. But there's a big question mark. What about the batteries? Journalist Steve Levine has spent quite a bit of time thinking about batteries and the problems and solutions they bring. He's the author of the book Powerhouse, America, China, and the Great Battery War. He now edits the new online newsletter, The Electric, for the technology publication, The Information. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Steve, we talked to you back in 2015 about your book and the global race to develop the battery of the future. Is that battery here yet?
Well, you know what? It is. It is. This is a very surprising thing that's 6 years ago now, and we were calling it back then the super battery, and it didn't come the way we thought it was going to come, which was in a blockbuster new invention. Some new chemistry, or it came incrementally year by year. We're right now on the cusp of lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles that can power mass-market-priced electric cars.
Mass-market-priced is the key there. How much have these batteries, key to electric cars, come down in price toward that goal of making them available, not just to somebody you can lay out six digits for a car?
Right. Well, the number kind of tossed around is 89-90%. So they were, when I started looking at batteries, which was about 10 years ago, they were the metric that's used is kilowatt hour per dollar per kilowatt hour. It was like $1,200, and the holy grail was 100. If you could get to $100 per kilowatt hour, then you would hit that point for the mass market electric vehicle. And we're right on the edge of that. Like we're at like 120 or something like that. And it's expected on the current trajectory in like 2023, we're going to cross over the line.
My understanding is that so far, a lot of these batteries, most of these batteries even, are made in China. But that may be changing. What's going on?
So, right. The batteries are unlike other batteries. kinds of technologies like cell phones, like silicon wafers, and so on, mobile devices. They're really heavy, and everything that goes into them is heavy. So therefore, it behooves you, if you're going to make an electric vehicle like Tesla is in the United States, and Ford and GM are moving into in a very big way. You want your battery factories and everything that goes into those batteries to be nearby. You want a local supply chain, and that's a big topic with me right now, which I'm very happy to dive into.
Yes, please do. We read some articles. This is why we called you now. A company called Redwood, somebody who had been part of Tesla, is trying to start up a big operation. Where are you looking in the United States for the battery production of the future?
Right. So this is such a it's a point of soul searching for Americans and for American industry. So it's just as you said that batteries, by and large, 80% of lithium-ion batteries are made in China, and all of the stuff going into the battery also is processed in China. So the ore, the cobalt, manganese, lithium, nickel, and all that comes from elsewhere, South America, Indonesia, from Africa. All that is shipped to China, and China's got this incredibly well-built out and mature processing industry. It takes it from that raw ore all the way to the battery grade electrodes that go into the batteries. It's that middle piece between the ore and those electrodes that we're missing. So we could also get the ore. We could also make the cells here, which is what people are talking about. No one is talking about that essential middle piece, and we can talk about the reasons for that. But that news that you just hinted at a minute ago is that Redwood Materials, which is a startup by J.B. Straubel, who made the battery packs that are behind the Tesla S, the Tesla X, all the Tesla line, and he designed the Gigafactory, the gigantic battery factory that's in Nevada. He left Tesla a couple years ago. He formed a recycling company. That's what Redwood Materials is. And then 2 weeks ago, he came out of nowhere, and announced, no one else is doing it. I'm going to build that middle piece. And on one hand, it's a wonderful moment if you care about, you know, the American economy and that the U.S. has control of its own future in this technology, electric vehicles. But it's a sad statement about American industry that none of the chemical companies, none of the auto companies, no one else, none of the financiers stepped up and said, you know, I'm going to own that middle space. Instead, it's yet another protege of Elon Musk.
Talking to Steve Levine, he edits the newsletter The Electric, and he's the author of the book Powerhouse, America, China, and the Great Battery War. We're talking about the efforts to keep up with what's likely to be a rapidly growing demand for batteries for electric vehicles. Steve, it doesn't sound like an easy logistical job. I'm going to start up a battery factory here. I'm going to get raw materials, as you mentioned, from all over the world to do this, and I'm going to do it in a way that's price competitive with China so that people here in the U.S. will want to buy it for the cars they're making. I mean, it's not an easy step that automakers or battery makers or chemical makers would want to jump into, right?
Well, we have a history of a chemical industry. Where did DuPont come from? Where did Dow come from? All that stuff was invented here. The center of the global chemical industry is in the United States, and so we surrendered all of that decades ago. I should say all of that, much of that, and So we do have the history. We have the muscle memory. We're missing. Of course, I want to stipulate that you are correct. It is not easy, and it takes the folks who are in this business in South Korea, in China. Those are the two main players, but also Japan. They spend years, like 5 years and more, perfecting the formula that it takes, the quality it takes to go into an electric vehicle. So it is a big thing. But to surrender that and say we're not going to do it, we're not going to get into that, it strikes me as a losing attitude. One of the problems, one of the reasons, besides the difficulty of doing it, is that the folks with the money, the investors, and you know we're talking hedge funds, private equity, venture capitalists from Silicon Valley. They want to finance buzzy startups, EV startups, and battery startups. They want to get behind General Motors' latest effort. The idea of creating of going into the chemicals, into the materials in industry is sort of boring for them. Maybe it is boring, but it's the meat and potatoes of it's the strategic meat and potatoes of a competitive battery and electric vehicle industry.
And I've been going along with kind of an assumption here that there's going to be a demand for these batteries for electric vehicles because there's going to be more and more of these vehicles made. Is that true?
Okay. So that we're all going under the assumption that when electric vehicle sticker price is the same or less than gasoline-driven cars, that people will give them, consumers will give them a hard look, and they'll start buying them in very large numbers. That is an assumption. No one can say whether that's true or not. We're going to find out, you know, in 2023, 2024. 2025, the whole world the whole global auto industry is making the assumption that that does happen, that there is a transformation. And when I say making the assumption, GM and Ford and Volkswagen, all three of them have committed $30 billion each to their individual efforts, spending by 2025, just in the next 4 years. That's a lot of money to put down. That's a big bet.
In just our last few moments, Steve, charging stations. If I got a battery in my car, I got to refill it. How important a part of the puzzle is this?
Huge. That is huge. So we have in our brain, you have it in your brain, I have it in mine, everyone you know does too, that we're not worried ever about the gasoline in our car. We're home, the car's almost empty. We know that we can drive 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles max any time of day or night and get it filled. Not the same with electric cars. You know, we don't know where the charging stations are. We don't know when we can drive in and get a charge, or how long it's going to take before we seriously look at buying an electric car. We have to have kind of in our assumptions. I know that I can charge that up, and I also know that I can charge it up in a reasonable amount of time. You know, 15-20 minutes max. I can get 200 miles on my car and get out of the station. So that has to happen.
Steve, thanks again for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Steve Levine is author of the book Powerhouse, America, China, and the Great Battery War. He edits the online newsletter The Electric for the technology publication The Information. He joined us for a look at the changing battery industry, maybe production coming to the United States to meet the needs of electric vehicles.